dust clouds rolling. And we're back, and that's the Travelers, who had the beautiful voice of Simone Taylor. We are going to be talking now with Peter McFarlane. He is the author of, and couldn't be more timely, Last Call for Canada, Sovereign Nation or Vassal State. And by the way, I want to remind you, Peter McFarlane has a Twitter account. At this point in time, you ought to begin, you should check every day and see what Peter has to say. He is the author, he's an author, journalist, and editor whose published works include Family Ties, How a Ukrainian Nazi and a Living Witness Link Canada to Ukraine Today, and From Brotherhood to Nationhood, George Manuel and the Making of the Modern Indian Movement. He lives in the Laurentians, north of Montreal, and I believe he's on the line. Are you there, Peter?
Yes, I am.
Peter, thanks very much for joining us. You're the guy to talk to today. I guess you probably weren't surprised this trade business between Trump and Carney suddenly, I guess I have to use the expression, went south. What's your take on this, and what should Canadians understand about this situation?
Yeah, I think just to start out, I think whatever happened on Friday night would be worth a book in itself, with all the forces coming together and breaking up. And I think a few details of that agreement had leaked out, that both the NDP and the Conservatives, and I think some of the provinces, were already criticizing it or denouncing it. That's before Friday. So I think what happened, really, I think it was Stephen Maher, a Liberal journalist, put it that Carney had sort of tentatively agreed to things that he couldn't sell in Canada. Mm-hmm. And then the hard to understand thing, or explain rather, is that apparently at the last minute, the Americans came in with a new set of demands that Canada would have to get rid of the French language protections, which would, of course, was not acceptable to any Canadian prime minister ever, because it would really lead to the breakup of the country. So it's hard to understand why those demands were made at that point. Chantal Hebert was on Radio Canada this morning, and she was pointing out that the Americans are the negotiators, not, of course, the Trump administration, but the negotiators really know Canada very well. And so, again, that's the big mystery of why those were put on at the last minute. But what it did, it gave Carney a convenient out on a deal that really he was negotiating that he couldn't sell in Canada anyway. So that's how it ended, by Saturday morning.
Isn't it a remarkable situation? So you're saying that the Americans came in with this language business. And I noticed, by the way, that isn't the top of the list for most of the reporting. But for Canada, that is a deal breaker, absolutely. Or Canada itself will break because this, our secret weapon is Quebec.
Exactly.
Because we know it's the undigestible piece. Americans are Anglo crazy. I mean, the reason they got into trouble when they have a living headache in Puerto Rico is they tried to make the Puerto Ricans speak English.
Right.
Do you think Trump was trying to do this? I mean, almost like just throw a grenade into the talks?
It's a part of it. I don't think anybody can be sure because it doesn't make a lot of sense from the American point of view. If they wanted that deal, they gave Carney a perfect out, that he certainly had to leave the table at that point. Although, as I mentioned, that there's a lot of indications that what he'd already agreed to was not acceptable to important parts of Canada, and he couldn't have sold it here anyways. But so I don't know if the Americans decided they didn't want the deal themselves, so they put that on the table, that Carney was, maybe mm-hmm. they thought Carney was going to agree to it, and they didn't want it. They decided for political reason that Trump would rather just go and come with the heavy hitting and try to deal with Canada that way. I just can't say it. So I think so 60 hours after the agreement was broken, so it's really hard to know what's going on at this point. Those are the thoughts that come to mind.
You know, it speaks to this idea of that there's almost a chaos strategy involving the way America does business. To to make each matter a little, it's like they're always dealing with crisis. It's a crisis-driven political system they've got, where it keeps the president in front of people. He keeps the people completely in turmoil, not knowing where they're going. Although it seems to be running out of steam. There's a new issue there. I mean, it's not looking, if they go ahead with the elections, people always put question marks now behind everything. Trump is going to be in deep trouble in about 3 months.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. On the trade, unfortunately, on the trade issue, that's the executive's prerogative. So he would still be dealing on the trade issues till he, you know, January, was it, what, 2 years from now? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess, was it 28 now? Yeah. So he'll be there on the trade issue until then for, you know, 2.5 years. But on the rest of his, I guess the danger is, of course, that people have been saying that if he loses the Senate by enough, and that he could actually be impeached. If the Republican vote collapses in the Senate, they could actually impeach him and remove him from office.
Mm-hmm. You use a word in your book, the Atlanticists, of which we are, I guess, one. And I just, there's almost a contention between coasts. I wish we were Pacificists. And I know you visited recently, you visited China.
Right.
And Carney introduced, I thought, an interesting and unfortunate term, and I've been speaking in the first half of the show about this. He speaks of non-market. He says we are sympathetic, or some words to that effect, with the United States, with our American counterparts, about the issue of non-market economies. Mm-hmm. And I guess it translates, he means China first, although I think he said there are maybe 15 countries that come under that rubric. But this is, I want you to, since you visited China recently and have thoughts about it, it seems to me this that's an ideological term, not actually an accurate empirical term. It's just ideology to talk about a non-market. We are in a market relationship to China. There is a World Trade Organization. Is there not? Why can we get away with using that kind of language in dealing with China?
That's very much American language, but it was also, this is something very important, that it was Chrystia Freeland who negotiated the CUSMA, that's the free trade agreement update that Trump demanded. I think it was signed in 2019 in his first, when he was first president. And in that, it prevents Canada. Canada agreed to that it would not sign any free trade agreements with a non-market economy. That, and it was specifically for China it was referenced, and it was Americans insisted on it, and they celebrated that agreement. And it passed with very little notice in Canada, but the Americans celebrated that agreement because it nailed Canada into the American sphere in an important way. So there was no way out as far as non-market economies of Canada than signing a free trade agreement with China. And this current negotiations, that was back in the at least in the leaked information about it. This was back in this agreement, an update on it, an extension of it. In this agreement, there was an article that said that U.S. Tariff levels, Canada would have to keep the same tariff levels, as the U.S. on against all the trading partners outside of North America. And so this was a major blow to Canadian sovereignty. I mean, if they put on Venezuela or Nicaragua, or you know, they have a tariffs on, like, I think it's 80 countries in the world, and Canada would have to meet each tariff on the American model, and that it would be sort of like signing away our foreign policy in many ways. And that was in the agreement on the table, the one that was broken on Friday. So that's a very important and very dangerous sort of article that Carney is signaling that he supports, and for Canada, that would be devastating.
And That is an expression of Atlanticism, right? If I'm using the term correctly.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And like Atlanticism, too, in Carney's sense, is that when he runs into difficulties with the Americans, he imagines that he can go and they can put together the middle powers. He said that in Doubt, that the middle powers would get together and they would sort of run the world on their own image. And serious economists denounce that as silly. I mean, they actually use the word as silly when he said it in Davos. Because you can. I mean, the middle powers right now, and he's talking about the Europeans, are in a very weak position economically. And there's no way that Canada could lose the American market and pivot to Europe. The amount of trade just isn't there for us. These are declining economies, not growing economies. I mean, the only economy that we could supplement what we'd lose from the Americans, of course, is with China, the growing economy in the Pacific, as you said. So the fact that Carney is indicating that he accepts the American dictum on non-market economies, that is anti-China, is a problem. Is a real problem for Canada, and it does indicate that he's going to eventually sign an agreement with the Americans.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, we were in favor of China becoming part of the World Trade Organization, to my knowledge. Maybe, perhaps we weren't, but they are. Mm-hmm. And it has rules, it has governing bodies, it has forms of adjudication of differences between states over, you know, trade, too much lumber, too little, or that, you know, they're not paying the workers enough. All that can be taken up. It's not as though we're being in it's a dictated matter from Beijing or from Ottawa. It's actually a trade organization. So to me, it strikes me that we're weighted down by our own ideology, of which is kind of put in the classically passive terms by the prime minister as non-market. You're in a market, right?
Right, absolutely. No, yeah, I think you're absolutely correct. I mean, this is the push for Americans to retain hegemony, and that's what the whole battle with China is about, China and BRICS. And Canada and Carney in Davos in January, he made some very impressive statements about, aligning and doing expansive deals with China. He did the small deal on automobiles. And they had plans for, you know, strategic partnerships and all that sort of thing. But as Carney often does, once he makes these grand pronouncements, he then starts backtracking. And on China, he backtracked quite a bit. I mean, in April, he joined the U.S. China Containment Group in the Philippines, the war games against China. And he signed a pact with the Philippines, allowed for sort of expanded military partnership between Canada and the military and the Philippines. And China, they have denounced that as causing problems, you know, military problems in the area, and I think Carney is in the process of kind of losing China at this point. They see him as a hypocritical.
Indeed. Now you visited there. I want to put that in. Shouldn't we? I mean, frankly, I think most Canadians, and I'll bet from your writing and research, et cetera, have the same impression. Canadians would like to see an actual something they could label Canadian foreign policy, not NATO, not U.S., and they would like to see a sober examination of the way we behave in the Middle East, or West Asia, or in the Pacific. And again, the Pacific represents, in terms of economic growth and dynamism, it looks like the future. So I'd like your take on this. We have a parliament that voted unanimously that China was committing genocide.
Right.
I mean, I hate to mention these things, but that's a little cloud in the background of all this. You've been there. Give both your analysis, but also the sense of what China represents to us.
Yeah, well, I think it does stem from the competition, the fact that Canada was very positive with China before I guess 2017, in 2000, just before Trump came to office the first time. In December 2016, Trudeau was in Beijing negotiating an actual free trade agreement with China. Then Trump got in 2017, January, and they came out with sort of this encyclical saying that China was a competitor and a rival to the U.S. And for the next 8 or 9 years, Canada had no visits with China. Their rhetoric sort of ramped up to match the American one. They put, I think it was 100% tariffs on Chinese EVs. And they followed America they kidnapped the vice president of Huawei.
Yes.
And so they followed the Americans very closely. And it wasn't until Trump again visited China in or met with the Chinese leader in the fall of 24 that 25 I guess yes because then Carney then met with Xi Jinping, but they've had a lot of pressure from the Americans about that, about Canada's opening to China, and we have done as we often have in the past, or always have in the past, we backed down on that. And at this point, I think recently China even put a 73% tariff on some of our agricultural goods because they just pretty well gave up that Canada was back into the American satellite, I guess, in the American skies.
Yes.
And as a provincial, sort of a provincial state of America, not an independent country.
Yeah, we had the... I think, you know, it's most... I think Canadians feel good about the, you know, the... stance of the government as a stance, but behind it are loom these problems that we really need to address. Your writing, by the way, really helps. I'll tell readers and listeners again that we're talking to Peter McFarland, and it's a last call for Canada, sovereign nation or vassal state. So we seem to be stepping towards unvassaldom. But issues such as Taiwan, and by the way, Peter McFarland Twitter, you posted a really helpful statement by a young woman in Taiwan, warning about the foolishness of playing with a population that, according to the United Nations, is part of China.
Sure.
And yet there's this thing going on. Of,
right.
Oh, what should we do for them? The answer is nothing. It's none of your business.
Right.
But talk about what she had to say and what you think and why you posted that.
Yeah. Well, she was being quite specific that it's very important that Taiwan avoid the fate of Ukraine because there's forces that want to use them the same way that Ukraine was used to take on Russia and to weaken Russia. That was the point of it. That Taiwan is being used the same way against China. And she was just analyzing what had happened to Ukraine by following the sort of the neocons in from the Americans and how that the same type of destruction would come to their country with no benefit at all. And when there really was at this point an opening for a negotiation with China, that you could have a status quo, but with increasing relations and partnerships and that sort of thing. And it could be an evolving thing rather than this insane sort of drive to war that we see in Europe against Russia, that she was adamant that Taiwan does not fall into that trap.
Yeah. And by the way, that's not, people ought not to understate this at all. You're writing in Family Ties and all the way, and of course, up to this new book, Last Call for Canada, is how we're sailing into dangerous waters, and we're weighted down with this. I'm learning this new word, Atlanticist, point of view. I want to ask you about, and I really appreciate you handling a bunch of curveballs that I'm throwing to you from all directions, but in the recent days, the prime minister or the president Donald Tusk of Poland.
Yeah. Yeah.
He said that instead of arresting the men who blew up the Nord Stream pipeline, we should be angry at the people who built it.
Exactly. Yeah.
He's talking about sabotage. International sabotage, billions, trillions of dollars, and also state relations. I'd love to know what you think about that.
Yeah, well, it's hard to really understand the Europeans. It's kind of a madness that seems to infect them, because they're this war against Russia that they've been carrying out and cheerleading for and paying for, and that it has been a disaster for them. I mean, the Germans, for example, with the pipeline, loss of the oil from and gas from Russia has kind of devastated their economy. They're closing Volkswagen plants left, right, and center, and they're from one of the leading manufacturing countries in the world. They're just sinking fast because they can no longer compete in the automotive market with China and others. So yeah, it's I cannot understand really the psychological mechanism that's driving the Europeans. I guess it's just loss of place in the world. That we've seen the rise of BRICS, and we've seen the incredible they're substituting the West in for economic advantages.
You know, but you think they could take Tusk to the world court for the remark like that?
Sure. Yeah. No. I mean, all sorts of illegal things that they're doing.
He's praising sabotage.
Yeah. And terrorism. That's it. It's hard to understand the motivation. But what they've seen too, and I think this is a bearing on Canada, is the rise of BRICS, and that is the alternative possibility for Canada, other than following sort of the U.S. dictates or this failing Atlanticism. And BRICS is usually portrayed in our press as some kind of authoritarian group of countries. But in fact, out of the five countries that form BRICS, they have the biggest democracy in South America, that's Brazil, biggest democracy in Africa, that's South Africa, and the biggest democracy in the world, that's India. So we could follow our friendly neighbor in this hemisphere, Brazil, and align ourselves more with BRICS and less with the failing economies and the failing sort of military powers of the West.
Yeah. And lastly, and you've called for people to pay attention, we have troops in Latvia at a time when Merz says he's going to build Germany into a great army again. And Poland is talking about praising sabotage. Is that a good time for us to have troops in Latvia?
No. And it's, I mean, I think even countries in Europe like France now are having really second guess. Yeah, this is about promoting German militarism again. This is a danger to the world. There's no question. We've seen it so many times before. And you've got a guy like Merz, who is just sort of full into the military path, sort of the Prussian discipline of Germany. And that's a danger to the world. It's a danger to Europeans.
Yeah. Well, Peter, we're really glad we could talk to you today. Thank you for writing Last Call for Canada, Sovereign Nation or Vassal State. That's Baraka Books. And also, we're following your Twitter very close because it couldn't be more timely. We really appreciate it. Thank you very, very much for being with us.
Thanks, Phil. Always a pleasure to speak with you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Peter McFarlane, and he is on Twitter. And yet that item on Taiwan, I really urge you to go to that site and listen to the young lady from Taiwan talk about the matter. According to Pedro, we have just about done this thing. Am I right? This is Phil Taylor for the Taylor Report, 33-45-78. Great show coming up.